Okay, so we now need to add some more information about the Fourier transform. We have already seen that for making the algorithm really fast, the length of the block in time domain must be a power of 2. You see this also here in Spectra Plus. The proposed values for the time block length is always the double of the previous one. 1000, 2000, 4000, 8000 and so on. Because only if you use a block with such length, a power of 2, the computation comes out to be really, really fast. This is a limitation, of course, because in some case you would like to use a different length of the time block. You can. There are tricks. One very often employed trick is to use a shorter block and zero pad to the next power of 2 length. If, for example, we want to make an FFT with 6 kilo points, 6 kilo points is not a power of 2, you sample 6 kilo points, add a number of zeros until you reach 8192. And at this point you perform the FFT of this zero padded block. This produces increased frequency resolution. So it's not, generally speaking, a bad choice. It just requires a slightly more computational power, but nowadays this is not a problem really. So it can become a good practice to actually use short time blocks and zero pad. This way, at least partially, you overcome the trade-off between narrow frequency resolution and narrow time domain blocks. You cannot have both high frequency resolution and short time blocks, but with the zero padding trick, you can get a spectrum which increases frequency resolution despite being short in time. Okay? This is one possible workaround around this problem. Of course, you cannot get more information from the same number of sampled points. So actually, the apparent increased resolution in frequency domain you get with zero padding is only apparent. What you have got in practice is just an interpolation of a coarse spectrum in which you recompute artificially a number of spectral lines in between, but it's not that you captured more information. If you captured 500 samples, you have 500 of information. You cannot have 2,000. You can interpolate. It's like those cheap cameras which are climbed to be able to make 5 megapixel photos, which of course is not true, because the sensor is just a VGR sensor of 0.3 megapixels. But interpolating, it saves an image with an apparent resolution of 5 megapixels. It's false in a certain sense. But if you look at this image and the interpolation is done properly, it's better than the original image at VGR resolution. Not as good as a true 5 megapixel, but not as bad as a standard VGI image. So this is a workaround which can provide some benefit. It's not the total solution to this indetermination principle problem, but it is a trick which is often employed. So I want you to know that this zero padding trick is quite often employed. Okay? You must be know that there is. You notice limit. Okay. Again, let's continue. Now, from the FFT spectrum, when you use Fourier as an analyzer, as in this software, Spectra Plus, it is employed for performing analysis of the sound. when you analyze the sound, you must be aware that the output of the FFT is a complex spectrum. At every frequency, what you get is a complex number. A complex number is a number with a real part and an imaginary part. As such, usually, there is absolutely no meaning in the fact that there is a value which is real and a value which is imaginary. Those two words has nothing to do with reality. No, it is not that the real part is real and the imaginary part you should discard because it's not real. The word real must be understood in a mathematical sense. Is the real part of a complex number. What does matter usually is the magnitude, the modulus of this compact number. And in some case, there is some phase information in this complex number. In most cases, the phase is meaningless. There is no meaning in the acoustical phase of a signal. This is true in 95% of cases. So you simply disregard the phase information contained in the complex spectrum and you focus only on the magnitude. When you focus only on the magnitude, what you take is a value in decibel, because we think in decibel, and the value is decibel, in decibel, is computed with any one of these two formulas. In the first one, you make the square of the real part plus the square of the imaginary part divided the square of the reference pressure. And this is the normal way of computing the magnitude of a complex number, of the square of a complex number. But as we are writing 10 times the logarithm, here we should insert the square pressure. Okay? So the square pressure is given by the real part squared plus the imaginary part squared. Fine. What instead is usually done is to write this magnitude spectrum or spectrum of the magnitude in this other way, making a product between two complex numbers. Here P of F is the complex number, is not P real or P imaginary. This is the complex number P given at a certain frequency F. What is P first? Is the complex conjugate of P. Okay? So if you multiply a complex number by its complex conjugate, it comes back to be this one. It is a trigonometrical identity which states that if you multiply a complex number A plus IB and you multiply for the conjugate, which means A minus IB, it comes back to be A squared plus B squared. And the imaginary unit I is gone. So often it is written this way, that this thing above, that is the Fourier spectrum multiplied the complex conjugate of the Fourier spectrum, is called the autospectrum of the signal. The autospectrum is the product of the Fourier spectrum by its complex conjugate, which comes back to be the square of the magnitude of the spectrum, or the spectrum of the square of the magnitude. Okay? The second version of the formula contains the definition of the autospectrum, which is the product at every frequency of the complex number P of F with its complex conjugate P first of F. Clear? We can also define a cross spectrum. A cross spectrum is when you have two signals, for example two microphones, you sample the signal of two microphones, so you get, for example, P left from the left ear microphone, P right from the right ear microphone, it's quite common for stereo recording, And then you can compute a cross-spectrum, multiply, for example, PL, P left, by the complex conjugate of P right. That is the cross-spectrum. While the auto-spectrum is a real quantity, because the imaginary unit is gone, the cross-spectrum is, in general, a complex number. And in some cases, it is useful to compute the cross-spectrum between two signals. When we only have one signal, you can only compute the auto-spectrum. Okay? And these contain only the magnitude information. In some cases, however, your signal over which you perform the Fourier transform has also a phase meaning. Also the phase of the complex spectrum is relevant. This doesn't happen usually when you sample noise or voice or music. Then the phase has no meaning. The phase has a meaning when the signal over which you apply the FFT is the impulse response of a system. As the impulse response at the end is a signal like another one, if you apply the Fourier spectrum of the impulse response, then the phase of the spectrum has a meaning. The meaning of the phase is the delay which the sound takes for going from the input to the output of the signal, of the system. Let's come back to the concept of a system, a very simple system like this one. When you inject the signal here, it propagates over those things here, and it comes out here after a while, after a certain delay. This delay in frequency domain becomes a phase shift. The phase shift is given by, is proportional to the delay, is omega t. Omega is the frequency, 2 pi graph f, multiplied for the delay t, give you the phase shift. So you can write something. Like phi, the phase, equal to pi Greek, Greek pi, 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 2 pi f t. T is the delay. So, P is how you see the delay when you are going in frequency domain. In time domain, you really see your signal which is shifted right. It is delayed in time domain. In frequency domain, the delay becomes a phase shift. And usually, the phase shift of a system is negative because the signal comes out after it entered the system, so you have a negative phase shift, because this is a negative delay. The system delay, in any case, you lose phase due to the delay, and the longer the delay, the steeper will be the phase curve in frequency domain. So typically, you see the delay of a signal in a chart like this one. Okay, this one is not an impulse response of a system. In fact, the phase is going up, in this case, it's not going down. But it is quite common to look at a chart containing magnitude and phase. This type of chart is called a Bode plot or a Bode chart, which contains the transfer function of a system expressed not anymore as an impulse response in time domain, but expressed as a spectrum of the magnitude and of the phase of the same system. And the knowledge, the information contained in such a spectrum, a complex spectrum, is exactly the same as the information which was contained in the impulse response. And you can go back and forth between the frequency domain representation of the transfer function of a system and its time domain representation, which is called the impulse response. Okay? If you throw away the phase information, the only knowing the magnitude of the frequency response of the system does not allow to compute back the time domain impulse response. If you only contains the magnitude of the system, the time domain representation of your transfer function is lost. So it is incomplete. You need the phase for characterizing completely the transfer function of a system, because the delay is an important information of a system. Not only if it boosts some frequency or if it reduces the level at another frequency. The delay fact, as we learned talking about the filter, the anti-aliasing filter, the delay is very important. And in general, is not a nice thing. We don't love delays. We hate delays. Delays cause echoes, cause reverberation, cause smearing in time. All facts that usually for the transfer function of a system are not desired. It's not always true. There are some cases in which we have a sound very dry and we want to add reverberation. In this case, the delay is warranted, but it is the exception. In most cases, like over a telephone line, you don't like delay. You get delay, you cannot avoid that. But the delay is usually our enemy. And the delay in time domain becomes phase in frequency domain. Okay? Now the most tricky point, leakage and windows. One of the assumptions of Mr. Fourier is that the signal being analyzed, that is the signal contained in the time block, is a period of a periodic signal, which repeats always identically. This is one assumption, which is generally wrong. Generally. I know only a very small number of cases where this periodicity is true. Even when we analyze a perfect sinusoid, which by definition is the periodic signal. But if the number of samples does not equate exactly a complete cycle of the waveform, it is not true anymore that the signal is periodic. Look at this example, which is exactly one sinusoid. But in this sinusoid, the block length, which in this example was 1 kilopoint, that is 1024 samples, doesn't match exactly with the length of the period. So you extract this piece of waveform, and this is one block. For Mr. Fourier, these blocks repeats and repeats and repeats. At the junction point between the end of the first block and the beginning on the next block, the signal is not doing a nice thing, because at the end of the first block, the signal was here, almost at minus 50 millivolts, and it suddenly jumps to this value here, which was the first in the block. So there is a spike. If you listen to this, it doesn't make two, it makes two tick, two tick, two tick, two tick. There is a tick whenever there is this sudden jump between one sample and the next. Is this nice? Is this good for performing Fourier analysis? Of course, it's not good. A sudden jump spreads energy over the whole spectrum, because the spectrum of a grading is white, is flat. So you have energy at every frequency. So whilst a sinusoid, in theory, in frequency domain, has only one peak at the frequency of the sinusoid, and the signal should be zero at whatever other frequency, in practice what happens is that the theoretical spectrum was this, let's call it a frequency domain Dirac delta, because it's 0000, pack one value, and 0000 again. This is what we expect, and this is what we get. We get a spectrum with leakage. Leakage is this phenomenon which brings away part of the total energy of the signal from the peak at the true frequency of the signal and spread it over frequency. Okay? So this is a frequency domain spreading, which is the dual time domain spreading caused by the anti-aliasing filter. But again, time domain, frequency domain are interconnected. So when something happens in time domain, in this case, this sudden jump, you have an artifact in frequency domain that is that spreading of the signal. And it is not nice. It's bad, actually. It's very bad. So, how can we solve this problem? Okay, if we were able to adjust freely the length of the block, we could search for the period and use Fourier blocks of exactly that length. But we are not free to choose the length of the block, because the length of the block must be the power of 2. So that is not the option. And the signal could be more complex than a perfect sinusoid. So it could be tricky and not trivial to understand its periodicity. Finally, who says that the signal is really periodic? My voice is not periodic. My voice is changing continuously. And we want to analyze my voice. So in the end, searching for the periodicity is not the solution. The solution is forcing the periodicity, or better, forcing the signal to have the same value at the beginning and at the end of the block. Which value? 0 is the only reasonable value. We need to bring to 0 the signal at both ends of the block. How we force the signal to go into 0? Apply a waiting window, that is a waiting function which proportionally reduces the amplitude of the signal at the beginning and at the end of the window of the block being computed. What you see here is one of those windows, which have funny names. There are a number of them. Here I gave you 6 of these well-known or not so well-known windows. There are many others, there are more than 20. Everyone has a different trade-off between accuracy of the value at the peak, presence of side lobes, and sharpness of the slope around the main peak, and so on. This here is the Henning window, which is more or less a raised cosine function. But there are many others. And we can make an experiment with Spectra Plus. Or with audition. One moment. Let me try an audition, which is simple. Let me generate a sinusoid at 48 kHz. And let me generate a sinusoid at 1 kHz. Okay, perfect. Like the calibrator, okay? Now, when we make the frequency analysis of this thing, we are employing one of those windows, and we can see how the spectrum change with different windows. This is the triangular one, which is not a very intelligent window in time domain. Still, it brings the signal to zero at the end. But as you see, there is quite large leakage. Not as large as no window, but still there is a not nice leakage here. Then we can have the hemming, much better, but still not perfect. The hemming, horrible, I hate the hemming. They have almost the same name, humming and hemming. Humming is reasonably good, humming is horrible. Never use the humming, okay? This is the Blackman. Blackman is a very good window. I don't know the mathematical definition. I only know that Mr. Blackman is a good one. This is the Welch, the Gaussian window, like the statistical window. Not particularly nice. This is the Blackman-Harris. It has these side lobes, you see. Blackman was more regular. Okay? Blackman-Harris has this, but it is narrower around the central peak. So, well, it is quite a good trade-off. Okay, you get this leakage here, while Mr. Blackman alone was lower here, but the peak is sharper. So Blackman-Harris is one of my preferred ones. Then we have Kaiser, not bad actually, and another version of Kaiser, which is even lower the leakage, but if you look here, it is broader the peak. So again, different trade-offs between different types of windows, okay? So what we have is the possibility to choose these windows to be applied to every block before performing the FFT and avoiding more or less this leakage problem. Okay? The point is that when you are analyzing continuously the signal coming in into your analyzer, like Spectra Plus does with my voice, if you periodically bring the signal to zero and then you open the gate again, the signal arriving when the gate was closed is lost. If an important event happens at the end of one block or the beginning of the next, when the window was pushing the gate to zero, you are not analyzing that event. This is not nice, and in Italy it is even against the law, because the Italian law requires that the analysis is performed giving equal weight at every sample along the waveform. You cannot periodically give a lot of weight, bring the weight down, bring the weight up again, so giving uneven weighting to the signal which has been recorded. You need to apply uniform weighting. In Italy, by law, is against the law, perform acoustical analysis with non-constant time weighting. So the trick is to overlap adjacent blocks. So actually, the blocks cannot be adjacent. They must be overlapped. The most simple case is the single... Here there was an animation which has been lost. Let me try. The most simple case is 50% overlapping. So you first record one block and you apply windowing to this block and you get the spectrum of this first block. Then you move your analysis window right in time by half a block. So you analyze a piece of signal which is half the old one and half a new piece of signal. You apply again your window into this second block of signal and you get a second spectrum. And you go ahead the same way, moving by 50% of the length of each block. Only this way, also what's happening at the boundary between one block and the next is being given full weight when you are analyzing the block shifted of only half the length of the block. In reality, for being compliant to the Italian law, even this 50% overlapping is not enough. For the Italian law, you need to have 75% overlapping. In many other countries, they are happy with 50%. Italy is particularly stringent in the requirements of accuracy for acoustic measurement. Also, for example, the microphones. In Italy, we need to use class 1 microphones. In many other countries, it is allowed to use class 2 microphones, which are less accurate. Italy is very stringent. It's probably in the world the country which has more stringent regulation, both for acoustical measurement and for compliance to limits and so on. So in Italy we need to overlap at least 75% every FFT block. If you use not overlapped block, your analysis is against the law. Okay? Okay, when we have this sequence of analyzed block, you can perform three things. One very simple is making an average. You have a number of spectra, you compute an average spectrum for a longer time. For example, 1 minute, 1 hour. Okay? That's not a problem. You use the formula for linear averaging, you get an equivalent 11 LQ, or you can employ exponential averaging with time constant called fast and slow, like with a sound level meter. You can emulate the time response of a sound level meter, the averaging capability of a sound level meter, employing a spectrum analyzer working with FFT. Alternatively, you can store separately all these spectra, recording what is called a multispectrum and presenting graphically the multispectrum in two well-known ways. They are called waterfall and spectrogram. You see the waterfall on the left and the spectrogram on the right. Now we perform this kind of analysis using SpectraPlus. We look at the spectrogram, we look at the waterfall, we type all these on the screen, we start running, oh, it's very fast, let me use a longer FFT block. Still a bit too fast for me, because this computer is very fast, this is another problem. So for making it slower, we can increase it again. Let me see how it behaves now. Pa pa pa. You see the instantaneous frequency going up and then going down. Pa. Okay, now perhaps it's a bit too slow. The intermediate one was probably the better choice. Pa. Those techniques which show you the simultaneous change of spectrum in time are often employed for analyzing speech or natural sound like the song of birds, the call of dolphins or whales or other kind of animals which communicate with various type of vocalization. It transforms actually the sound in an image, particularly the sonogram. The sonogram creates a two-dimensional image which can be processed with standard image processing analysis. So, for example, you can perform pattern matching for voice recognition. Most voice recognition software that this software, which understands what you are saying into the computer, perform this kind of sonograph analysis and make a graphical pattern matching between the image of your voice and the pre-stored image of a number of phonemes corresponding to the various letters of the alphabet, more or less. Okay? So they recognize what you are saying by pattern matching over the acoustical image of a phonetic alphabet. In Italian, there is little difference between the phonetic alphabet and the written alphabet. In other languages, like in English, the phonetic alphabet has more than 60 symbols, while the written alphabet has only 25. And the matching between the ASCII code of the character and the corresponding sound is not univocal. So making this kind of voice recognition in English is a nightmare, it's terrible. In Italian, Italian is one of the easier languages for machine recognition of voice, because it's a so-called transparent language, where there is a very accurate matching between phonetic alphabet and written alphabet. There are a few exceptions, just 4 or 5, over a list of 25 symbols. So for 20 of the 25 symbols, the correspondence is perfect and univocal. There are a few exceptions, like the written letter C, which can be sweet or hard, C or K, and there is an ambivalence there. But with some other rules, you can very easily solve these phonetic ambiguities. So making machine learning in Italian with this kind of pattern analysis, it is relatively easy. Okay. Well, at this point, we reintroduce the fast convolution. We did already explain this in the previous part of the course. The trick is, instead of performing convolution in time domain, making n computation of a product and a sum for every sample, if we go in frequency domain, the computation is much, much faster, because now you only have to make one multiplication for every frequency beam. What was convolution in time domain becomes simple multiplication in frequency domain. Why? Boo, there is a theorem, the convolution theorem, stating this. Some people in the electrical engineering field has also the task for the examination to prove this theorem. We are not going to do that in this course. We trust to the convolution theorem. We know that in frequency domain you just have to multiply, while here you have to make n multiplication and then summation. So there is a great benefit in terms of computational load on the processor doing this red path. Making the FFT and the inverse FFT is very, very fast on modern computers. So this is not the large computational load. The large computational load is still the multiplication, but the longer the filter, the smaller is this task for every sample being sent in output. Because here you have to make n multiplication and summation, and here just one multiplication. So you have a 2n benefit. For n very long, several hundreds of thousand samples, this path is thousands and thousands of times faster than the direct one. Okay? So in practice, the only problem is that you require a lot of memory if n is large. Well, the other problem, if you make a single FFT of the whole length of a song, for example, which is 3 minutes, it not only requires a lot of memory, but it also requires that the song is finished before you start processing. So the first solution, which was developed by Mr. Oppenheim in 1975, was the overlap and save algorithm, in which you divide your input signal in a sequence of blocks and you perform the frequency domain convolution on one block after the other. You don't wait for the whole length of the song to finish for performing only one very long FFT. You prefer to make a number of shorter FFT on smaller blocks of signal. Okay? With this trick, you get a sequence of output blocks which are sent to the output, and in this case, the memory requirement is still large, if n is large, but not as large as before, and there is still some latency between input and output, because you don't have any more to wait for the whole length of the song, but you have to wait to fill one endpoint block before starting process. So you have a latency, considering also the time required to do the processing, which is typically twice the length of one block. If the block is, say, 100,000 samples, it means a latency of more than 2 seconds, which is not short enough for real-time application, like singing in a concert or TV broadcasting, the voice delayed by 2 seconds after the video. It's not acceptable, such a large latency. So, the third algorithm being invented was the uniformly partitioned overlap and save, in which the impulse response, the filter, the coefficients of the filter, are also partitioned, in this example, in 4 blocks. This reduces the size of each block being processed and reduces the latency. I must say that there is also a 4th algorithm, which is the not uniform partitioned overlap and save. In the not uniform partitioned overlap and save, the first block is shorter, the second is longer, the third is even longer, and so on. As the latency is given by the length of the first block, this makes it possible, with a given number of blocks, say 4, like in this case, to reduce further the latency, because the first block is shorter than the others. Nevertheless, on modern processors, it is more convenient to employ uniformly partitioned overlap and save. This is due to the hardware architecture of the processor. For optimum performance, the length of the block should be less, just less, than the size of the cache memory of the processor. This way, the whole block of data can be accessed at once, because it was all stored in the cache memory. If you exceed the cache memory block size, if the block size exceeds its cache memory size, the access to the data becomes much slower. So, although theoretically, it should be cheaper to use longer blocks in the last part of the tail, in practice it is not. If you benchmark on a modern processor the 2 algorithms, the uniformly partitioned one, which for a given latency require to use more blocks, because they stay small, all the blocks are small, but they are fast, because a small block stays within the cache memory side, so it is accessed in nothing. While if the blocks, you make them longer and longer, they become larger than the cache memory, and the computer stalls, waiting data from the memory. On a modern processor, multiplication and summation are fast. The slow operation is memory access whenever you don't have the data reading the cache. So, on this modern processor, the previous algorithm, also this was invented in the 60s, I think 2 years later than the overlap and save. So, this very old algorithm, nowadays, is faster, then the not uniformly partitioned overlapping save, which was invented in the 90s, so it's 30 years later. When it was invented, it was considered a breakthrough, a very great invention, but in practice, nowadays, it is not, because the old algorithm performs better on modern processor than the new one. Those waves happen in the science. Okay? Okay, I think we can stop now. Any question? Where is that?